Hi guys, I'm here to warn you that this week's episode contains some strong language and some adult themes, more so than our usual podcast, so if you're not into the adult language, might want to give this one a pass. Just a heads up. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And on the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis. What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. We got a pretty exciting podcast for everyone this week. On the line as we speak, we are joined by ex-WHU employee and Dave Walker from the West Ham Way UK. So guys, thank you so much for joining us. What's going on?
Good to be here, mate. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us on, mate.
Yeah, no problem at all. We're so excited that we can make this partnership work together, and we just both wanted to say thank you so much for having the faith in us to carry the brand forward. So thank you both for that.
Oh, thanks for doing problem. Such a good job, lads.
So it's funny. Hopefully we're not going to be a little bit rusty on here. Brawley is usually I'm going to call him out for a minute. He's usually our guest guy, and his faucet has run a little dry lately. However, he was able to wrangle X and Dave to join us. So I want to thank him there. And again, thank you guys for joining us. And I'm excited to have everybody.
Yeah, looking forward to it, chaps.
To be honest, I'd rather you'd found someone else for me to come on, but I'll put up with Dave for now, to be fair. Next time, can you raise the bar a little bit, though, please?
Well, at least I haven't got a look at him tonight. That's something, I suppose.
Listen, we don't have the same connections you guys have, all right? You guys got all these other kinds of people on the phone. You guys are about the best we can get right now. So,
I'll take this
compliment, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, slightly devalued our appearance now, but go on, carry on.
You guys have raised our profile quite a bit in joining this partnership, so we should be the ones saying thank you to you guys.
Well, to be fair, X has tried to put me in touch with Craig Forrest, and I got a good amount of feedback from Craig Forrest, but all of a sudden it just stopped replying to me. He followed me on Twitter. He was messaging me back and forth, and all of a sudden just ghosted. I was very confused, but X did try to get us a former player, and then I think you've even tried to put me in touch with another one that hasn't quite worked out either, but
well, I'll give it another go, mate. To be fair, I was waiting for the sort of Craig Forrest one, but if that's now not happening, then I'll sort someone else out. But as we said earlier, Dave knows them more than me, so you know, he steals my mates, so yeah, check with him.
Let's just say mates in inverted commas, by the way.
Ooh, football friends. Friends. Exactly. X, I think people on Twitter have probably noticed these days that you've been a lot quieter, and I just was wanting to know if you would like to comment on that. Are you busy at work, or are you just trying to avoid the negativity of Twitter? What's going on? Why have you been so quiet on Twitter these days?
It's a bit of a combination. I mean, to be fair, I think I've only been quiet since about Saturday. So, but like in the
people
in
are going
the
mad.
Pardon?
Well, people are just going mad about it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like Saturday, what is that? 3 days' time? Is it 3 days? That's a long time in West Ham life cycle, I guess. But firstly, like you said, I'm back at work now. I'm lucky to get a decent period of time off. And since the whole COVID thing, sure. I've obviously been off work pretty much since March time, where it's been a lot more easy for me to do the whole ITK stuff. I went back to work last Monday, as I've said on our podcast repeatedly. I've got like no signal there. I can't use the internet, so I can't therefore text or message any of my sources. So it does kind of make it a lot harder. But also over the weekend, so I had a break from Twitter not long ago. I had a week on holiday, and I thought, yeah, I'm going to take a week off Twitter, and I really, really enjoyed it. Like, it just was so nice not to have the negativity and toxic stuff that's on there. And then so all the stuff that's been going on with not signing anyone and everything, and then for some reason when West Ham don't sign anyone, certain group of fans like to blame me. I wish I had that kind of authority and that power to be directly at fault for the reason West Ham haven't signed anyone, but I haven't. And sometimes I look at that Twitter and I think, do you know what, why am I bothering with this? So I just kind of thought to myself, well, I'm doing two podcasts this week, obviously yours and our own, so I thought I'll just ease off a little bit this week and then just say what I'm going to say on those, and then maybe I'll see how I feel afterwards. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just not, it's not a great place to be on Twitter at times, so sometimes I do it for my mental sanity.
Oh, I can imagine. I get overwhelmed on Twitter sometimes with all the news going on. I can only imagine you who's having, well, 20, 30 people at a time replying to each tweet you make, just calling you a fraud or calling you all sorts of names. And I don't know, I would get sick of it very, very quickly.
The thing is, mate, it's mainly like anonymous accounts, like of like 17-year-old, 18-year-olds, and whilst it doesn't wind me up personally, it's just tiresome. Like, you know, you just kind of feel I'm too old for this now type thing. So that's why. But...
Well, I figured Dave's phone would be the busiest out of all of us, considering he's Source One. Is that right, Dave?
Well, apparently so. I didn't realize that was a theory up until you just said that, but do you know what, it's funny because when X went quiet, my phone absolutely blew up with everyone wanting to know where X was. So
like your secretary,
it's like he subcontracts to me his workload and all the bullshit that comes with it. But yeah, no, it's been a crazy time, but let's be honest, as a West Ham fan, is it anything other than crazy, you know?
It's funny because I told you guys pre-recording that I thought that you guys were playing a joke as the Source One story, because your West Ham Way UK Twitter account tweeted the screenshot, and I was like, oh, this is definitely, well, I thought it was real at first, and then I got to the end of it, but I was like, oh, this must be a wind-up between X and Dave and putting this out, trying to get Sky to bite on some sources there.
No, I'll be honest with you. The West Ham Way tweets, the one that followed about Zabba being the peacemaker and Roberto trying to catch David Sullivan, that was actually me that wrote that. I'm not going to lie. That was me that wrote that tweet, just for a bit of a piss take, because the story was so absolutely ridiculous that I just thought I'm going to just add some ridiculousness to it, and I did. And so that, yeah, I admit, the tweet on the West Ham Way account was actually me that did that.
That's hilarious.
I was saying to you boys before, though, obviously when I first saw it, you know, a lot of people did believe it, because let's be honest, you know, nothing surprises us at the moment with the ownership and the times that we're living in. So it's almost like the unbelievable is believable at the moment. But I did see it, and the first thing I thought was Karen Brady never interacts with the players anyway. So for her to go down to the dressing room and address the entire squad about selling Grady Dee and Garner just didn't make sense at all. And secondly, I think they mentioned that we had a training session in on the Saturday morning, but I can't see as we'd have done that if we played on the Saturday.
Exactly.
So that was my thought process. Immediately, I just thought it was bollocks. But it's just typical media or fans of other clubs just wanting to stir the pot to wind West Ham fans up, unless there's elements of that X is going to say is true. I don't know.
No, I mean, there was no elements. I mean, obviously the players were disappointed that they sold Dean Garner. That's probably the only element of truth in that scenario. Yeah. I mean, Noble and Mazowarki were friends. You know, there was one about him putting the boot in on him and stuff like, you know, and also, like, the thing that was so ridiculous about it as well is that, you know, it was just so, I don't know, there were so many things that just wouldn't happen. And and I think, you know, like Dave said, these things can happen at West Ham. They are ludicrous. But what happens is most weeks, like, see, obviously with what I do, I get people that send me rumours and they'll say to me, X is this true? X is this true? X is this true? And the majority of them are similar to Source One's message. They are literally like, you know, David Sullivan brought in a load of porn for the squad, boosted team morale, the players were all in there having a laugh together, and then Brady walked in offended and was like, what are you guys doing? I'm literally like, do people genuinely think that sort of stuff happens? But as Dave said, if it was going to happen at any football club, it would be West Ham.
So it's good that you guys can categorically rule that out. That's good. Basically, I would like to move straight into basically what's caused this whole shitstorm of just unhappiness, really. I mean, it's just the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of people, and that's the sale of Grady Dee and Garner. Now, as we talked about before we recorded, you guys have already put out a podcast basically on this subject, solely for this subject. As we sit here basically a week on from the sale, or 5 days after the sale, do you guys still have the same feelings towards the sale, or have your opinions changed? Dave, I want to start with you. Have you kept the same views on the sale? Disappointed?
Yeah, I'm disappointed, but this is a very strange scenario because usually when you talk about transfer activity, it's just black and white on the player and the transaction that took place. But with so much more that sits behind it with Grady, that's what makes it hard to take for me and every other fan. Because, like I say, you know, an academy prospect, he went out on loan. And whenever you send a player out on loan, it's with a view of developing that player to come back and strengthen your own squad. And he's one of our own. He's been with us since he was 14. He loves the club. I'm sure we'll get into this in a little bit, but he didn't want to leave. And, you know, we've said throughout the season, probably the last two or three seasons, we're looking for players now that actually want to be at West Ham. You could argue that's been our biggest problem, is the amount of enthusiasm our players have or don't have when they turn out on a Saturday afternoon. But with Grady, you know you're at least going to get that. And I see so much kind of speculation, and X talks about it as well, when you talk about the likes of Benrahma. And I've seen some excitement generated, but to be honest with you, arguably, amongst our fan base, generally speaking, I've seen more excitement at the prospect of Grady being part of the squad 100%. Than signing a Benrahma. So he's already here. He's already here. He's an academy prospect, and after a lull of, God, 10-plus years of not bringing anyone through our academy, which has made us so famous, we're finally bringing through some boys, and we choose to sell one for not a lot of money. And it's like you said, Brody, you're quite right. It's a straw that broke the camel's back. There's so much more going on that West Ham fans, understandably, are living in this boiling pot of resentment that any little thing that happens will trigger it. And now, having sold Grady, we're going into a season, a man down, and signings that should be in the squad that ain't. And that's a real problem.
X, go ahead. You have your opinions changed at all?
I wouldn't say they've changed. I mean, I do agree with everything that Dave said there. The only thing I would say is I think whilst I would never have sold Grady, to try and give a bit of balance to it, the aim was to try and sell Lanzini or Anderson so that we had some cash, whether we should be in this financial situation. You know, most fans say we shouldn't, but the bottom line is that's what the board's saying. We need some cash for players. The hope was to sell those two. Had we sold both or at least one of them, I don't think they would have sold Grady. So almost the massive decline of those two has almost brought upon this situation in some ways. That said, obviously, I'm massively gutted. I'm a big advocate of the academy. Regularly on the podcast that we do, I try to promote academy players and try to say which ones are coming through and stuff. So in that respect, I am disappointed. But what we've got to do, in my opinion, is judge the window at the end of it. And I know I say that and it's probably going to be too late, but if they do invest this money that they've got from Grady into a good left back and a good centre back, you could argue that we needed them more than an additional winger when we've got quite a few wingers. So I'm trying to be a little bit balanced, but my gut feeling, I'll be honest with you, was the same as what Dave's was. Like, why are we doing this? This is a massive disappointment, but I'm trying to see the logic in it.
Well, I'd argue, and I think that I've said this before on one of our podcasts, but it's frustrating to me because I feel like the board, they talk about being poor or not having, or we have a financial problem, but I'd argue that they've put themselves in this scenario between, you know, for example, we're talking about trying to sell Anderson. Well, they're the ones who paid $40 million for Anderson or whatever that fee was. You know, yeah. The Lanzini injury, okay, that was out of their hands because obviously they have no control over injuries on international duty, but overpaying high wages for many of players, you know, I don't think that they should be let off the hook for the financial problems, whether they're COVID fault or their own fault, but the poor investment in the manager and it not working out. I think that they've put themselves in this issue and now Grady has to be the victim.
Yeah, and no, I think that's a fair point. So I need to be honest with you. I think poor recruitment certainly in the Pellegrini reign, whether you blame it on him, Eusilios, whoever, there has been poor recruitment, and ultimately this has led to this problem. No one wants to see Grady sold. It's been very clear that his teammates didn't want to, so it's had that kind of real negative effect. And it always does when you sell an academy player, because an academy player, the fans, particularly as we're known as the academy, you have that affiliation with those players. It's like, heaven forbid if we sell Declan Rice, you think the knock-on effects of Grady's bad. Imagine what that's going to be like.
Well, I think a lot of us I don't know that it will be as bad. I think after the sale of Diangana, it's going to be really bad if we sell Declan Rice. But I think most of us were prepared to lose Declan to Chelsea for a reasonable fee. And no one was going to be angry at Declan for seeing him go to his boyhood club and playing in the Champions League. But now that they've sold Diangana, there will be a mutiny on their hands if they sell Declan Rice. I mean, it will get ugly.
I'm not upset that if they sold Declan Rice. I'm not upset at the prospect of him going. I'm up because, you know, if he needs to go to a bigger club and surrounded by better players, and that's better for his career and for England, then so be it. But I'm more upset that we haven't surrounded him with the players to take us to that next level. So I would not be upset with him. I'm still upset with the board that they haven't cultivated a great culture and made the proper investments, because they've made the investments. They just haven't put them in any of the right places to make a team succeed. And now they can't invest this summer unless they sold Grady Diangana. And look at the team that we're going to have going into the new year. Every team is invested, improved. And have we improved? No.
Yeah, I think, is it true that we are the only Premier League team to not bring in a player? Is that true? Does anyone know?
I don't, but I was sent a message today, which basically told me what the overall spend was of all the clubs in the top flight. I'll just load it up now. It's on my phone somewhere, and it basically breaks down that. So Leicester, obviously, because they sold Chilwell, have made a profit of 23 million. Brighton have made a profit of 16 million. And West Ham are the next one with a profit of 11.49 million. And if you compare the fact that we've made a gain of 11.49 million and Chelsea, yes, I'm obviously picking the top one, but have spent 134 million. You know, Leeds have spent 61. You know, so you can argue Leeds are a potential competitor of ours.
Yeah.
They've spent 61 million already. You know, you do look at it like that and you think, how comes a club that plays supposedly in the stadium that we do is in the financial situation that we are in?
Do you know what? Something I'll add to that as well, just on the back of Declan, for example. I mean, there's three things that worry me about this. The first one is, how much are we actually going to sell Dec for? The second thing is, who will we replace him with? And the third thing is, when you look at West Ham today, and in recent times, to be honest, the constant, relentless PR car crash that is West Ham United, that's recently been heightened by our club captain coming out on Twitter saying what he was saying. The likes of Deck and Wilshere liked that comment to show support. That was clearly a message against the bold. You look at all of this collectively, would you want to play for West Ham if you was a neutral player?
No.
Because I've got to be honest, if you look at some of the targets, and even at Tarkowski from Burnley,
yep.
You know, if I'm him and I'm looking at West Ham and I'm reading the papers, I'm looking at social media and I'm looking at what a toxic, poisonous club West Ham has become, do I want to fucking join West Ham? And if he's thinking that, who else is thinking that? And you're right, you might get a bit of an underdog, a young kid, a championship player that would bite your hand off regardless of what's going on to join West Ham. But is that good enough to replace Declan with at the moment? Because I would want, not that they exist in my opinion, but as realistically, as near as damn it to Declan as we can get. But you're talking top quality players there. What top quality player is going to want to join West Ham in this day and age?
I'm not sure if I was being sensitive, but I almost took Sean Dyche's comments on the on that sale as a slight dig. Because he said something along the lines of, look, we're in a position of power. We don't need to sell. So we're not going to be taking a lowball offer or something along. I'm paraphrasing. But I almost took that as a dig at us, as we needed to sell to buy. And they're like, well, we don't. So go ahead, offer that 50 or too bad, so sad.
Exactly. And I think that's another thing that kind of sums up the situation that we are in and shouldn't be in. Like a club like Burnley, I mean, yes, they've got a bit of history, but in recent years, certainly since we've all been alive, Burnley shouldn't be comparable to West Ham in terms of stature and size and so on. Yet they're able to be like that. Yet we have to skimp around trying to get 5 million for a jetty and 4 or 5 million for Hugo or whatever it was we got. So I think I think it is a sad state of affairs that we are in this point, and I just think maybe, you know, it's time to realise, either as fans, that this is the, what it, our future is going to be, or the board have to set up, because either way, I just can't see the situation changing unless Moyes or another manager is able to somehow use what he's got and turn it around, because I don't think we'll get big investment for a new number of years now.
X, one thing before we move on from Diangana, I wanted to ask is, do you know what the sell-on figure is, or what percent do we get from West Brom selling Diangana on, and do we have a buyback clause, and if so, do you know how much that is as well?
As far as I know, we sold him for 18 million. There's a 20% sell-on clause, so obviously if we sold him for 20 million, we'd get 4 million. If they sold him for 20 million, we'd get 4 million, that type of thing. I think my quick maths is right there. and also, I don't think we've got a buyback clause. As far as I know, I hadn't heard that. No, I mean, the thing with Diangana, like I said, and this is also a sad state of affairs, I guess, is that if you look at, and I said it on our podcast, but if you look at the sellable assets that West Ham have, unfortunately, really, if you're going to make any money on anyone, you've probably got Diop, you've probably got Rice, and you have Diangana. Anyone else, really?
Okay,
Suchek and Bowen, but you're not going to sell them
right
as that quickly after buying them. There's none of the other players that I can think of off the top of my head. Are you going to make a particularly significant amount of money on? And if you think that's three players out of a squad of, you know, 23 or whatever, that's not a great situation.
And it's catch 22, because I think you could add to those assets if Anderson, Lanzini, and Haller started performing,
for sure.
But then if they start performing, you're not going to want to sell them.
Yep.
It's a horrible situation.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, you got rid of the one guy who was performing and giving Allaire service for the first time.
Anyway, one thing I wanted to also ask you, X, is do you know what David Moyes' reaction was to the sale of Grady Diangana?
You kind of only had to see the reaction of the players on Twitter on Friday and spilling over to Saturday, that none of the players were happy with it. Now, I have to be careful what I say here, but I do believe that the players were told by Moyes, don't worry, I'm looking to strengthen the squad. Now, if you, by selling Diangana, a player that's very, very popular amongst the squad and a good player, you're saying, I'm going to strengthen the squad, but then you're selling one of the, you know, the players that they wouldn't have once sold. So, I mean, it's fair to say, and you can just look at Twitter, that players weren't happy. I think David Moyes, given the choice, wouldn't have sold Diangana, but I think he's prioritised the fact that he needs a defender, at least one defender, and then probably a left back and probably a right back as well. I think he's thought, well, if I can't get money from anywhere else and beggars can't be choosers, I'm gonna have to take the Diangana money and use that.
So he was given a choice, is basically what you're saying.
I think the choice was, you keep Diangana and you have no money, or you sell Diangana and you have money.
Fair enough.
Or you keep Diangana and you got no job.
Okay, one more thing. Since we have sold Diangana now, so that gives us roughly 18 million pounds to spend in theory. Do you know who specifically we are looking at? Are there any deals that are close to being done? Where are we at in the buying process and spending this Diangana money?
Well, we're not close to signing anyone at the moment. Again, hence why I thought I might as well take a Twitter break now, because we're not going to have much to talk about anyway. They obviously put in a bid for Trioski, however you pronounce it.
Tarkovsky, yeah.
Thank you. But he, I mean, the bid was no way near going to be accepted, as we've established. So I think they are interested in him. There's a couple of left backs that I'm aware that we've scouted. I probably need to save those for our show.
Yep,
I'm going to burn out my news. But there are a few left backs that we have definitely looked at and are on the radar. But the thing is, I don't have much optimism at the moment at all in us signing anyone, because when it comes to the start of the window, generally how my knowledge works in terms of transfers is that I will be given the list of targets that David Moyes and his, I say scouts, but we all know he doesn't have plural of those, so his scout and his trusted agents have come together with, and I can see, and generally there's usually about 30 or 40 players on that. If I was to list all of them, fans would be like, oh, that's amazing. But if I do that, more often than not, they never join West Ham. Like Shane Duffy, for example, was definitely on that list. 100%, he was in the top three of the centre-backs, and then we've let him join Celtic. You know, Eze was on that list, but then we didn't have any money to buy a winger, so he is now at Palace. So those targets quickly move on from being targets.
And what massively frustrates me with the Dean Garner sale as well is we've taken the 18 million... But what's the plan behind taking that 18 million?
Yep.
Where was the inquiries on your shortlist of players? Where was the phone calls to the club as if to say, right, one of our top targets has accepted a £25 million deal, which means if we sell Grady for 18, we've got to put 7 million of our own money into it, and that's okay. We can afford that. We'll do it. It seems like we've just sold the player, taken the money, with actual no genuine strategy as to what we do next. Now we're just going to throw stupid offers left, right and centre, and probably not one of them is going to be accepted, and then the transfer window will end with us having nobody. It's a constant lack of strategy at West Ham, and there's no common sense.
The situation that we've got ourselves into, though, is that, and this will be the argument that David Sullivan would give you if he was to be sat here on this podcast, is that he would say that he was trusted, you know, fans wanted him to get a top quality manager, which he would argue he did in Pellegrini. The fans wanted him to back that manager, which I guess if you look at the money he was given, he did. They wanted him to appoint a director of football, which in his he did, and then he would turn around now and say, look how what happened with that. That massively backfired. So sorry everyone, but I'm doing it my way or the highway, and my way is that I'm in charge of football, of the transfers. David Sullivan is the director of football.
Yeah, but then I would say if you're talking about your ambitions in past tense and this is it now, we're no longer going to appoint a top manager, we're no longer going to throw money at it, when we're talking about Premier League football, modern day football, where it's money, 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 then it's time to sell the club to someone that will. Because just because we had a crack at it and it didn't work doesn't mean to say we should stop having a crack at it. You know? It's completely defeatist of him to say that. And you're quite right, because I think that's what he would say. And that, to be quite honest with you, fucking winds me up even more.
I was going to say, something that makes me sick about what X said is Sullivan would say all of that. But just because you did something... And, you know, the fans asked for a better a top manager. The fans asked for investment. Just because you did it, X, you said it right. You said that they did it. But that doesn't mean you did it correctly. And that does not mean you did it well. So you may have did it, Mr. Sullivan, but that doesn't mean you did it well. But the point I was actually going to make before you guys wound me up on that was, I don't know about y'all, but I get so frustrated. We're talking about all these transfer targets that we missed out on to Palace, to Celtic, begging Burnley, the ambition from Everton. All of these mid-table clubs and lower table and even championship sides, like these are the teams that I envy, that I think that we're on par with on financial status, supposedly, on history, on quote-unquote big club, and we're consistently just beat out by our mid-table rivals, and we're always going to be low until we see some sort of actual ambition.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. We talk about the players underperforming. You know, I don't have any confidence in our manager, and this is another part of the argument. I said earlier about if you're a good top player now, Would you want to come to West Ham? If you're a good top manager, would you want to come to West Ham?
Well, no, and they I don't. Honestly, and that's why we couldn't get one.
that's why we've got David Moyes. Exactly. Mm. So that's a fallback from that. So you look at these players that we're talking about, how we can't get them playing, how we don't have a system, how we don't seem to know our best formation. There's no in-game management. We can't turn to a squad of players that can change the game. At the top of that sits the manager. Yes, we always talk about the ball. Yes, we always talk about the players. But the manager is a fundamental part of success on the pitch with those players. And I honestly believe that if a top manager, and I mean a top manager, came into West Ham and saw this club as a project and got backed like the current owners won't back him, he would take the likes of Philippe Anderson, Lanzini, and I guarantee you'll see the best out of them. And everything West Ham will do will make sense. We'll play fluid football, formations that fit well. Halil will be scoring goals. Anderson will be exciting fans again. But again, we talk about the players, talk about the ball, talk about the manager. Everything is wrong at West Ham. That's the problem.
It really is. It's a massive problem. One more question I had for X. How do I put this? What do you think the chances are that this window goes by and West Ham have not signed a single player?
glad I'm not tweeting this on Twitter. I think we will sign someone. I think the board would know that would literally be, not that there's much like credibility as it is, but I think that would literally be game over if they did that as close as it is anyway. But I think they would know that would just be horrendous. So I think at worst case scenario, we would end up with maybe a centre back and a left back from abroad, maybe that no one's particularly heard of. Might be a bit of a bargain attempt. Maybe a guy on loan, possibly, that we take a gamble on. I mean, we did that with Souček and it worked. So yeah. they may try that. And I think that'd be worst case scenario. I mean, at the moment, there's not anything that I know of that's particularly close. However, I mean, how long have we got now? The window goes open to October, I think, isn't it now?
Yeah, I think something October like 1st, I believe, yeah.
There you go. So we've got another for 3 weeks. So technically, whilst you'd much rather they'd been signed at the start so you can blub them in over pre-season and things like that, there is still time to sign players. And I do think if they've sold Grady and then not brought anyone in, there would be absolutely zero point of doing that. So I think unless they're complete morons, which is a possibility. Well, I think they would be very stupid to sell Diangana and then not sign anyone.
If I think maybe some people would take it as, or they already are taking this Diangana sale and not spending anything as the club stripping assets and getting ready to be put up for sale. Do you have any thoughts on that? Is that true, or is this strictly a case of they're broke and they're trying to get as much money in without putting any of their own money in?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter, like what you just described there. I think they can't actually, well, they can sell before 2023, but the valuation of the club, as far as I know, is 800 million. Now, there was actually some interest from a few people, including a big name American agency, I guess, which I know the name of, but I'm a bit reluctant to say how I know that. But it's so there has been some interest. But if they sell before 2023, no, I'm not the most clued up on this. Sean Whetstone's better than me for this sort of thing. But I think if they sell up at, like I said before, they have to pay some form of tax, which massively reduces the value of the club. Also, I think by 2023, I'd imagine the stadium would have pretty much been given to us by then, in the sense that it's costing the UK government so much money to keep it afloat. Yeah. And stuff, they might just push it off to let us have. So they would, if they're businessmen, and obviously with the COVID situation as well, now is not the time to sell the club. It's not going to be financially beneficial for them. So I think we're going to have them for a minimum of 2 years. What they want to happen is they want 10% of the club to be bought by an investor. So an investor buys 10%, puts money in for transfers and so on, and then in 2 years' time, if that investor wants to, he buys out the rest. But at the moment, there's no investor that's keen to buy 10%, and I guess work under the command of David Sullivan and David Guttle. So that's the situation, as far as I know it.
My question is to either one of you guys. You mentioned that I've heard this been said a bunch of times all over the place about the UK government potentially handing over the stadium because of the losses. Would there be any advantage for them for the board to say no, we don't want it? Because it seems like such a loss of revenue for the country, wouldn't that mean it would pretty much be a loss? I hope I don't sound like an idiot, but wouldn't that mean they would be taking on that debt and loss every season if the board owned the stadium? So wouldn't it almost be like, hey, we signed a lease, y'all made a bad business decision, and we're just going to keep the lease as is?
I think it would if it was ours, we could do a lot more to it. I think the actual value of the, I don't know, the grounds and the building would outweigh the loss on it, if that makes sense. But I think, I think also because we would own it, we could also do things to it, like, you know, we could make more money from other events there and things like that. And I know that the legacy's tried to do that. I'm not an expert when it comes to financial stuff, but I think certainly, whether it was given the option of having a stadium or not, then take it. And let's be honest, mate, if we don't take it, we've got nowhere else to play. So if we don't take it, we're going to have to make a new ground or rent somebody else's. So, yeah, I think take it.
Dave, do you have anything to add to this topic before we move on?
Not really. I mean, I think X is right. You're kind of looking into complicated territory when you look at this sort of stuff. But, you know, I think the fans see the stadium a lot different to the owners, in my opinion. How many changes the owners actually feel were necessary to that stadium, I don't know. I understand what X is saying about the potential events that are going to take place there. There's revenue opportunities there. And if we do make certain structural changes, might increase the value of the stadium. I get that. And this is where I'm kind of in over my head a little bit. But, you know, I think if you talk to a fan that goes week in, week out, I think they're going to give a very different feedback on the stadium to what the owners would. So what the genuine enthusiasm would be for them to do that, I don't know.
Fair enough. So we'll move on now. The next kind of this personality has taken over Twitter the last few days, and that is TalkSport's Jim White. He's constantly on the airwaves spewing this, I don't know, it seems like it's a love affair with the owners. He has some sort of affinity with them. And X, I wanted to start with you. Are you aware of any connection between Jim White and the board? And do you have any idea why he has this affinity for Gold Sullivan and Brady, and why he seems to like to bash the West Ham fans?
Yes, I could tell you pretty much spot on why he does it. But again, I'm going to be a little bit careful. But what I would say is, if you are in David Sullivan's good books, let's say, so you're in the media, you're a journalist or a, you know, a TV presenter or whatever, and you're in David Sullivan's good books, David Sullivan will tell you things. He will tell you who we're interested in. He will give you the heads up on its things. He will let you know what player we're going to go for and so on. If you're in the bad books, i.e. you don't back him or you criticize him or whatever, he will not help you with news. So for Jim White and what he does, let's be honest, he's the face of transfer deadline day. Yep. He's the face of basically transfers on Sky Sports. For him, if he goes and slags off the chairman of West Ham, he's going to get his sources and his news from West Ham completely cut. So it's in his job interest to not do that. If he wants to do well at his job, he wants to keep the person that's going to know most about what's happening at transfers at West Ham on side. And he's probably also going to know what's happening at other clubs as well, because like I've proven with Chelsea, if you've got a few contacts in football, you can get news at other clubs as well. So David Sullivan, despite being West Ham's chairman, could probably tell you what other clubs were going to do as well. So if you're protecting your self-interest, you tell David Sullivan that you're going to protect him publicly, you make a big show of it, and then David Sullivan's your best buddy, so to speak, and then you're going to start getting info and your job's going to be that much easier. That's why.
Well, frankly, on the surface as well, it makes good radio for them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. You know, I've talked about Jim White more in the last – and tweeted about Jim White more in the last, 3 days than I have in the past 3 years.
Which is what they want.
Exactly.
Well, it's exactly what they want. So on the face of it, they're getting – for media, bad press is good press. Talking about talk sport, whether it's wind-ups, because that's why they always get the idiots on there who call in. I really feel like a lot of the times on talk sport and was it Five Live or whatever the other one we listen to on the way home sometimes from away days in the car, they just get people who call in who are absolutely idiots rather than like people who have a good opinion because it makes for good radio because we talk about it for 3 days and now all of a sudden they're tagged in every post. You know,
Tony, you've called it spot on there, mate. To be fair to you, that's exactly what it is, because what they do is they get, you know, Jason Cundy, yeah, is one of their main presenters. Yeah. If you look at his career, he played a bit for Tottenham, a bit for Chelsea when neither of those clubs were particularly good, hasn't really got much of a career at all. But what he does do is that he says controversial opinions that me and you in the next match gets wound up by, so we call into the show and we're like, oh no, you're wrong, blah blah blah, and it keeps it interesting. If everyone called up the show and it was like, yeah, agree with you, it'd be boring. Look at Arsenal Fan TV, look how popular yep. they are. They're popular because they have rants and say controversial things, you know, whereas, like, you know, so I'll be honest, sometimes for our podcast, because I can predict what Dave's going to say, I'm not saying he's predictable, but like he's like, you know, my best mate. So I know him, you know, as well as I know my family. I can roughly estimate what he's going to say. Occasionally, well, not occasionally, quite often, I will say an alternative opinion to him. One that I don't always agree with, but sometimes I'll say it just to provoke that debate and that talk. So you're right. It's that and the reason I gave as well.
Dave, do you have anything you want to add on the Jim White topic?
No, I mean, I'm not going to repeat anything you guys have said because I think you've got the nail on the head in terms of the motives there. I think you're spot on. The only thing that kind of frustrates me is when you get neutral presenters talking about football generally and they're talking about sensitive subjects passionately when they don't know what they're talking about. And that's prime Jim White. You know, he was very passionate and almost angry about why West Ham fans are behaving the way they're behaving when he doesn't know the backstory. And he gave some fluffy little comment about, you know, I love West Ham, I like West Ham. I used to go when Harry Redknapp was manager and Paolo Di Canio was there. And I'm like, fucking do me a favour, Jim. And he's trying to say, you know, the working class people, and I really like them. And then he goes, that's the cushion comments, to then say,
and then shit on
us. I don't
know
what your problem is. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, you don't know what our problem is, Jim, because you don't know what our problem is. So until you understand what our problem is, you know, stop being so antagonistic. I understand it's for radio, but yes, they do a tough job talking about football teams generically. I'm a football fan. I couldn't do it. I couldn't sit on radio and talk about current affairs at Burnley or Liverpool. I can only do it at West Ham. So I think presenters really should just be, I suppose, should host topics of conversation and let the fans come in and give the actual nuts and bolts of why they feel the way they feel, and then discuss points around that. So that's what needled me with him, is that he's coming out and saying what he's saying purely because he's motivated by his own job security and his relationship with David Sullivan, rather than actually putting a knowledgeable spin on what's going on at West Ham.
Do you think it's best, and I know it's hard, but do you think the best course of action is to ignore it and not... Because I've tried to get that message across. I tweeted out a tweet saying, I mean, you guys just feed into the talk sport monster when you guys quote tweet and retweet all these Jim White being a clown. Is the best thing for us to do is simply ignore it and try not to feed into it?
Probably you're spot on, and I speak from my own experience. Yeah, obviously I get people that knock me and don't like what I do, yet these people are ones that constantly tweet about me. So, all right, it's negative, but they're the ones that put, oh, X is starting again. Oh, X is this, X is that, X is that. And they keep talking about me. And yeah. if the more they do that, I say to them, the more you do that, the more you keep the whole X inverted commas thing going because yeah. you keep it relevant. The best way, if you really disagree with what I do and hate what I do, is don't talk about me. And then people won't be interested. But you, by them saying, oh, he's wrong on this, so people will then try and challenge it. So you're spot on. If you don't want TalkSport to be as prominent as it is, don't listen, don't comment on it, don't pay attention to it, and they'll soon change their strategy.
Yeah, I've tried to get that message across, but just it's too easy for fans of all teams, but West Ham fans seem to take the bait relatively easily. It's hard not to take the bait on Twitter sometimes. I mean, we're all mm-hmm. on it, so it is very hard not to take the bait. But I think the best course of action, in my opinion, just ignore it, and it'll blow over within a day or two. Mm. Okay, so the next thing I have on my list here is hopefully a quick subject for us, but there's been rumors on various websites that David Moyes will be resigning on Friday. He's not going to do it today or tomorrow. He's going to wait until Friday, and then he's going to resign because it's the day before the season. X or Dave, if you guys know anything, do either of you know, are there any legs to this, or is Moyes going to be behind the bench on Saturday against Newcastle?
Okay, I mean, I don't think you really have to be ITK to answer this one. I'm sure Dave could answer it without being to put him on a spot, but do you think Moyes is going to be the manager on Saturday, mate?
Yeah, of course. I mean, just quickly, you know, David Moyes, for all the trials and tribulations, and I'm sure this is one of the reasons he's at West Ham, I bet he can't believe he's lucky that he's at a club like West Ham.
Yeah.
Let's be completely and utterly honest about it. So with respect to David Moyes, I think you could probably throw most things at him and he's not going to walk away from a Premier League football club, especially one like West Ham. So, no, very obviously, he'll still be there.
And that's exactly what it is. Like Dave's called it, it's exactly that. You've got to remember that David Moyes was a West Ham manager. He was dismissed because we wanted to have a better manager. He waited 18 months before being given another job to then be given the job back that he'd had in the first place. So he isn't, no disrespect to him, he isn't blessed with options. If he walks out of West Ham on Friday, which I don't know why, specifically Friday as well. Why didn't he just do it yesterday or today or whatever? I don't know what's keeping him there till Friday. But anyway, if he was to walk out on Friday, he will lose all of his contract, because if a manager resigns, they don't get any compensation for it. If they're sacked, you have to pay out their contract to them. But if you resign, you don't. You know, yes, he may do that if he was going on to, dare I say it, manage Manchester United again. You know, he might do that, but he's not going to do that. And at the end of the day, I think part of the reason Sullivan appointed him is because he isn't the sort of manager that is going to rock the boat. He's just going to go along with, as Dave said, whatever shit's thrown at him, so to speak.
Would either of you two, Dave, let's start with you, would you have any more respect for David Moyes if he was resigning out of protest because he was fed up with the way the board are running things?
No. No, I would have respect for him if he stayed in the job, stayed professional, stayed classy. The fans know what's going on. Everyone knows what's going on. We know what he has to contend with. You know, I'll give him a bit of stick myself. And it's nothing personal because I like him as a man, but I would lose respect for him if he resigned on Friday, which we all know he won't.
Yeah, X, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see what it would achieve. Yeah, like, he's made it clear that he hasn't made it clear, but he could make it clear that he didn't want to sell Dean Garner. That's the same thing as resigning. Surely it's better to say, look, I didn't want to sell him, but I want to make West Ham deliver the team that the fans deserve. Like Dave said, I'd have much more respect for that than just walking away from a difficult situation.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Tony, would you respect David Moyes from walking away from this out of protest if he were to leave?
I think he'd be stupid to do that. I'm going to just ring what you guys have already said, that I think he's lucky to be at West Ham, because really, frankly, none of us want him here. Other than, like, you know, I'm just saying everything y'all already said. Dave, I like him as a person, But at the same time, I don't think that he's the quality manager that we all hoped that we would have and at the level that we wish we were at. Here we are, like we said at the beginning of the podcast, with a manager that we don't really want that we already sacked. 5 years into the stadium situation, and it's all bad. So yeah. So I back to the actual question was, would I respect him if he quit? No, but I would also understand if he did. But we know that it's not true.
Yeah,
and also I think if he did quit, I think it would also be giving the players an excuse to underperform.
Yeah, maybe so.
I think it would. It wouldn't be any motivation for them whatsoever. And you know, I don't want to disrespect the players' professionalism, but I think more than one of those players would hide behind that and use that as an excuse to take their foot off the gas.
I totally agree with that.
And that doesn't sit well with me at all.
Yeah, well, there's too many of them on a wage packet, and they could care less whether we win or lose. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing with me is. You have players that are on huge, huge money that when we lose, they look like they couldn't care less. I mean, they're happy to be earning the money that they are. So losing to them is nothing, and they could care less. And there's too many divas, and it frustrates the hell out of me. I know it does you as well, Dave, and I can't stand it. The next thing I had on my list here is just a quick note on Twitter. Right before we started recording this, it was announced that Newcastle, our first game of the season, has now been moved to 8 p.m. UK time, which is a very late decision, but thankfully there's no fans going, so I guess it doesn't really matter. But so here in the States, it'll be 3 p.m. Eastern and 2 p.m. Central. So just mark that on your calendars. Don't think it's still a 3 p.m. kickoff over there. And Arsenal away.
You boys can get a lay-in now, can't you?
Yeah, we can. We can sleep in now. It'll be nice. Yeah. It'll be very good.
Yeah, I could give you a little bit of exclusive if you want for the show TVs. Yeah. I think that we're likely to move the Wolves game as well. I think at the moment, I think that game will move too. They're looking to try and get that on TV. It's not confirmed yet, but there's talks to get that one on as well. So that would mean, I think, as far as I remember, Arsenal is on TV as well. So you should be able to get all three soon. But I think there is actually some talks to try and stream every single game as well. I think that might be written out soon.
Yeah, I think that was announced right before we came on, that every game in September will be streamed live on TV over there.
Has that been announced? I didn't know.
Literally straight before we came on, that was announced. So.
Okay, right, yeah. Okay, that's my exclusive bugger then. But that was meant to be part of the exclusive, so yeah, I apologize.
No, you're all right.
Recording hour early.
Yeah, you're all right. The next brief thing I wanted to touch on is we drew Charlton in the Carabao Cup. So we have the two worst run clubs in London derby, and that should be very, very interesting. It's a shame that fans can't go to that, because I actually think it'd be a good away day for Charlton and probably a fun day for West Ham fans as well. But it's a shame no one can go to that.
Charlton are one of the few London teams I actually don't mind. I've done a few tweets trying to drum up a bit of support for people trying to save that club it was their ex-vice chairman, Peter Varney. I know him. So I've been trying to support him a bit with it. But I actually quite like Charlton. But I know Dave doesn't because personal reasons. But I don't mind.
Fucking Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah, I hope they go bankrupt. Fuck them. I was at Charlton for 3 years when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and they released me in not very good terms. So no, fuck them. No respect for them at all.
Wish Declan had that same attitude.
I know, don't we all?
It's always been Dave's attitude that lets him down, to be fair, whatever scenario you put him in.
Dave, I didn't even know you were a footballer to begin with.
I was, yeah. Spent 3 years at Charlton, 2 years at Leighton Orient. So 5 years in total. And, I mean, they would have heard this. I've got to tell it. You know what's coming.
I've heard this story more times than I've had roast dinners, I tell you.
Well, we haven't heard of it on our show, so go ahead.
Well, that's the reason I'm telling it. Yeah, you go and make a cup of tea, X. But when I was at Charlton, and I will put this in a nutshell, because I mean, X has heard it so many times, I've told it so many times, so I'm boring myself now, but you guys haven't heard this. Jermaine Defoe, you remember him. Obviously, he had a good career anyway, but he'd done well at West Ham when he was a kid. Well, before he was at West Ham, he was at Charlton, and I was at Charlton with him. And I remember in those days, you didn't play against other professional academies. You just trained three times a week, and that was it. I did it when I was with Leighton Orient, but I didn't with Charlton. Anyway, this big, intense grudge match was formed by the coaches for the East London Academy of Charlton to play the South London Academy of Charlton. And the coaches were going to look at all the boys that were playing and basically pick out the few that they thought were the top boys. And it was so tough to call. I remember all the parents thinking, Kai, you know, how's it going to go? It's going to be close, isn't it? And all that kind of stuff. And the coaches were licking their lips. And it was a really highly anticipated game. So we didn't know which way it was going to go. And I know that they did have some decent players as well. No word of a lie, we won the game 14-1 and Jermaine Defoe scored 12.
That's incredible.
He scored 12 goals that day. And you knew. I set up 11. I set up 11 of them.
Ah, 11 assists. Good day out.
I don't think I played that badly, but yeah, it certainly didn't stand out as much as Jermaine did. But yeah, you knew what a player he was going to be. Even in training, he's just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, I've always thought I was destined for a career in football, time, but it never happened. And for that reason, fuck Charlton. Out they go.
Anyway, moving on now. We did play a friendly over the weekend, the infamous Betway Cup that we never seemed to win, and Bournemouth came to town and whipped up on us 5-3, or was it 5-2, I don't remember. But anyway, basically the only thing I wanted to ask you two about this game is, do you think that alarming, horrendous defensive performance is going to maybe urge the owners a little bit more to buy a couple of defenders, whereas maybe they weren't going to before? Or did we learn anything at all?
I think they would have been concerned at the defending, because again, it was the same old problems: fullbacks not stopping crosses, players being able to dribble for our defence, the same problems that we've had for numerous years now are still there. I mean, you know, we've needed a new left back for 3 years, maybe, yeah. And we're still playing Cresswell or Masuaku. Centre back, with Reed's situation, and like that, he'll probably never play for us again. We've needed another one.
Diop was terrible. Diop was horrendous. Right. His effort, I thought, was one of the worst efforts put forth by a West Ham player that I've seen in a while. And that I think the third goal. That he just quit running on. I mean, I thought he was appalling. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're right, mate. I agree with you. And I think, yes, it highlights the need for... I mean, we've conceded... I know it's a friendly, so it's not like the be-all and end-all, but we have conceded 5 goals against the Championship side, basically. Yep. So you do wonder what is going to happen in the Premier League. I think we haven't learned anything. What we knew was our weakness. It's just highlighted it again.
Another season without a trophy, unfortunately for us.
Get used to that, mate.
Yeah, that's exactly. Every season.
Yeah.
Come on, Raleigh, we need a little positivity. We didn't even start the season yet. It was another season without the Betway Cup, but who knows? The treble is coming in this season, and we'll all be happy.
Well, here's a chance.
The only trebles that are coming in are down the fucking pub, mate.
That's very true. there's a chance for us to go positive here. Real quickly, I thought we would do a game or something here, but I think that's a little cheesy. I just want to get your Dave and X, your thoughts on where we're going to finish this season. Do we get relegated? What position do we finish in? Do you guys have any guess for yourselves as to where West Ham United finish the season? Dave, we'll start with you.
Well, I've said previously 12th was my prediction. After the last couple of weeks, I've got to be honest, I think that's optimistic now.
Very.
I do think that it's going to be another tough season. And, you know, look, the Bournemouth game is only a friendly. It doesn't matter if we'd have won 5-0, you know, it's only a friendly. But, like X said, and he's quite right, it does highlight the problems that we all knew were already there. But what worries me was a part of that defeat down to motivation with these players now? Are they feeling completely and utterly dejected?
Maybe.
Are they feeling angry behind the scenes? Because if you look at Mark Noble's tweets, it certainly suggests they are. You know, how motivated and enthusiastic is David Moyes? How's he coming across to the players knowing that he's been hard done by the ball with Dean Garner South? So mentally going into this season is a concern for me. I've said on many occasions that our starting 11, when they're performing, is what I've said in the past, top seven. I'll negotiate a top eight.
Yeah.
So we've got the quality. I don't think we have the manager to get the best out of them week after week. And I don't think we have the professionalism, heart and desire for each one of those players to turn up off their own backs week after week after week. But because the quality's there, we'll pick up results. Probably enough to stay up, in my opinion. But I am going to drop to 14th from my original 12th. I think it's going to be another disappointing season for me.
Now, fair enough. X, what do you think?
I think I agree with what Dave said, but I think I'm going to be even more pessimistic. I'm going to go for 15th, 16th, I think.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So my prediction for this season is for us to finish 16th, and that's a big, big difference from me on this show predicting that we would finish 8th last season. So we've dropped 8 places from my previous prediction last season. Tony, where are we finishing this season?
Okay, so last year you and I did our prediction game cheesy thing, and I said 8th as well. I have a bold prediction. I think we finish top half.
Wow.
If, ready? Right, but there's a contingency. If we can get through this first set of games without a slump. So what I'm saying is, if we can pick up a few results in this first crazy stretch, because I think the first 8 games we play anyone who finished in the top half, except for maybe like one team, right? I think after, if I remember the schedule right, October is a doozy, right? Or is it November? Whatever. It is. After we get through that stretch, if we're in a reasonable position of maybe 15th or 14th, I think we can press for top half when we start playing some easier sides. I think if we are sitting 18th, 19th, 20th in the relegation zone or 17th after that that extremely tough stretch, I think the negativity will take over in the side. And I think we'll see what happened last year when I think we have a team of players that cannot handle a relegation battle. I think we have a bunch of prima donnas who do extremely well when we're flying high and do extremely poor when we're in the gutter and have a very, very tough time digging out. So I think if we can pick up a few good results in this crazy stretch, I think we'll press on and shock everybody and get top half. I think if we slip into the relegation zone and we're not getting a single result and there's negativity, the fans are upset, and I'm not blaming the fans. I'm saying everybody's upset. The fans are upset. The clubhouse is rotten. The board is on the manager's back. I think that we could be in some serious, serious trouble.
So, but you didn't answer the question. Where are we finishing this season?
10th.
10th. There, he's putting it on paper, folks.
I'll
write
it on paper.
Print it.
I'll say that we headline. Get through this stretch, and I think we finished 10th.
Tony Clark predicts West Ham United to finish 10th. Print the headlines.
He also believes in the Tooth Fairy as well.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And Santa. No, I seriously think, I do believe it. I do believe. I'm trying to be positive here.
Hey,
and I really do think that if we can get through the tough stretch, I think we'll be okay. And all of a sudden, we'll start seeing some results go our way in December going into the second half of the season.
Well, but real quickly before we go into the Q&A, this would hinge a lot of my prediction. I wanted to ask X this, and I'm sitting here watching Declan Rice play. It's 0-0, Denmark-England in the 78th minute. Declan Rice has had a stormer of a game. He's played terrific. But X, as a fan or as an ITK, I don't care how you answer this, but in your heart of hearts, do you think Declan Rice is a West Ham player come the end of the transfer window? And I'm putting you on the spot here. I'm sorry. I put you right on the spot.
That's okay. I think if Chelsea bid an offer that is within an acceptable range, so maybe, I guess, 70 million, maybe north of that. If Chelsea put in an offer like that, I think we will accept it. And if we accept it, then I think he'll go. Because firstly, why would you stay when the club basically tells you to go? And also, it's your boyhood club. It's the club all your family support. You know, your dad's a huge fan. You're going to play the Champions League. You're going to challenge for titles and so on. And I think he will go. It's just whether Chelsea put that bid in, because they're trying to sign a keeper at the moment. I believe they're going to sign Mendy. They're going to get him for about 26 million. Then that leaves them just the midfield role, which they want to fill. They do want to sell Jorginho and maybe a couple of others to finance the deal. But I think if they raise the money, then they'll go.
Is there a possibility of us taking one or two Chelsea players the other way part of the deal?
Yeah, there is. I mean, we've been offered pretty much every one of their fringe players, kind of indirectly, because Chelsea haven't put an official bid in as such yet, but they've made it clear which players are available. I think we might take one, I would say, possibly two, but it's, I just hope it doesn't come to that, because I think, you know, it was very reminiscent of when we had Rio Ferdinand, and everyone was like, we shouldn't sell him. We sold him, and then it was the decline of what should have been arguably a title-challenging side. If you think we would have had Rio, Frank Lampard, Joe Cole, Jermaine Defoe, Di Canio, Sinclair, the list is endless. I probably missed a few out there. And yet, because we sold him, it triggered the rest to go. If we sell Declan Rice, I just don't think it sends out the message that we're going forward.
Fair enough. Well,
also, just on that, probably as well, I'm personally clinging on to the fact that Chelsea have spent a hell of a lot of money.
Yep.
And if they sign a keeper, which I believe is more of a priority than Dec, how much money are they going to have left, and how much money are they going to be allowed to spend after the spree they've had so far? That is an outside hope, I think, that he will stay with us before the transfer window ends. I don't know. I just think I'd be very surprised if there isn't some behind-the-scenes conversation with Dec's representatives in Chelsea, managing his expectation. For example, if I was Frank Lampard and I'd spent a shitload of money in this transfer window, I would be making it very clear to Dec that it isn't going to happen this window, but next year you will be a Chelsea player because you will be my number one priority. And I would be keeping in touch with him to let him know that. So that, I think that could be a possible scenario, unless Chelsea somehow managed to find £70 million after everything they've spent, and then I think it's goodbye debt.
Would that be considered tapping up or according to the rules?
Of course it would.
But it happens all the time.
Mate, to let you into how ITKs function, obviously you need to know people that are involved in the transfer, so the scouts and things like that. You need to know players and stuff. But the main way to know whether a transfer is happening, in a lot of, not all my knowledge comes from, but a decent percentage comes from agents who will say to me, just off the record, you know, they might be trying to get rid of their players, just off the record. I think of someone, Hugo spoke to Norwich. Norwich have already spoken to him. They haven't put in a bid in yet, but we've already spoke to him. Every player would have spoke to the club that they're potentially going to join before a bid's ever officially put in. And like you say, that is tapping up. It is illegal, but it happens all the time, unfortunately.
All right, and we're going to move along to our Q&A section, guys. I know we've kept you a little long. We really appreciate you staying on here for so long, but we'll make this...
We were meant to be with you in America, weren't we, this year?
We were.
I'm gutted we didn't get to play the horse game with you, Brawley.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I'll take... Actually, that sounds a bit dodgy.
I don't know what all that is about. I'm glad I missed last year.
the horse game in the casino.
That's some freaky shit.
In the MGM Grand, there is a casino game where you can raise, it's like the Kentucky Derby game, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah. And me and X had a good time playing that one. But there's a couple.
You did, I'll fucking clear that.
Sure.
Did I, X?
You did.
I mean, left, right, and center.
they, I mean, most people go to Vegas and they come back broken. Dave actually went to Vegas and came very healthy. And so he's probably the only man that's done that, and that's including giving $100 to a wannabe rapper. You know, even despite doing that, I think he still made money out there. So that's another story for another show.
I think I told that story on one of our recent episodes, didn't I, Tony? When Dave walked up to the rapper and he should have gave him a tenner, but he gave him $100 bill and had to, and then he went back and asked for it back.
Most awful conversation you could ever be part of, honestly.
I must admit, it's awful. Obviously, I feared for my friend's life. There was a strong element of humor watching him trying to get that money.
It's your bloody currency out there. It's all the fucking same. It's like Monopoly money.
Yeah,
it's all the same size, all the same weight, everything.
Yeah,
shit, that's funny.
It was hilarious. Anyway, we'll keep the Vegas theme because we have a couple questions about that. So John Black sent in a question, and he says, "Can Dave remember what was in the intimacy kit in the hotel room in Vegas?"
I can't really trying to stick it up, mate. I mean, sorry.
Do you know what? That was another funny thing, right? Because I'm not sure we've told the story in our own podcast, but do you know, it was funny because I don't know what it was. Obviously, me and X were sharing a room in Vegas, and I don't know if you picked up on this, X. I think you did because I'm sure we discussed it. But I just got this feeling that the maids thought that we were a couple. it just stuck in my head. You know, when you just get a feeling from someone. I mean, if that's true, X has done fucking well for himself. But you know,
it's the fact they found us in the bath together.
But do you know what was funny, right? These maids that obviously thought that we were a couple were coming in cleaning the room every day, and I think the day of the event, your dad, Brawley, brought a mask for X to wear, didn't he? Like a wrestling mask.
Yeah, a luchador mask.
That could in some ways be seen as a bit of a gimp's mask. Well, obviously, after the event, we took that back and we left that on the bed unwittingly. And then the maids would have come in and seen that when they was cleaning. So that probably already confirmed the fact that they thought we was a couple. But then when it was coming, when we came to check out, you know, you get like the mini bars and all this kind of thing. And you know that with a mini bar, if you pull out a little bottle of JD or whatever, you'll get charged like $8,000 to your bill or something stupid like that. But you know that. But on top of that was some like sweets and all this kind of stuff. So I'm looking at it and all this kind of stuff. The ex is in the shower. And I picked up this one tube. I thought, what's that? And I picked it up. And I read it and I thought, well, I'll be fucked. And I went over to X and I said, oh, X, listen to this. I said, intimacy kit. And to answer John's question, I'm sure I'm going to miss some bits here, but there was lubricant. There was a butt plug. I know that was it. There was condoms. I think there was a cock ring. But we were laughing about it. But then I put it back. Right, I put it back. So, you know, I'm not being funny. Contrary to what the maids might have thought, we didn't need anything. So we went down to check out, and it was funny because X was checking us out, and he was getting on really well with the fella. And then when I walked over, for some reason, there seemed to be a bit of a frosty atmosphere. And then I clocked. What had happened was this fella's looking down the bill when he's got to the line item where it's his intimacy kit, realised that X has shared a room with me, and now he now thinks we're a fucking couple. Because although we didn't take the intimacy kit away with us, because we picked it up off its sensor and put it back, it charged us like $45. So, I'm right. That's funny.
Explain that one to the lady. And we left it to John being the Vegas resident, to try and sort out the fact that we didn't have to pay for that intimacy kit. And to this day, I don't know whether we paid for it or not, to be honest with you, or whether John just took the bill, I'm not sure. But either way, the intimacy kit didn't actually involve any intimacy, unfortunately. Well,
unless we did pay for it and he went back for the intimacy kit. I don't know.
And he took it home.
Yeah, exactly.
He's listening to this show now with a butt plug in.
Reach out, John. Let us know how that went.
He's a good lad. He's a good lad, John.
This one ties in with the Vegas. Lena Starr on Twitter reached out and said, any plans to move the event from this year in Los Angeles / Las Vegas to next year? And I know John worked really hard to try to get it to work this year, and it obviously nothing worked this year. Do you guys know, are there any talks to moving it to next year? Are you open to coming back next year? What's the word?
I mean, for me, like, one of the most gutting things recently for me is that we've said it on our show, but Dave and I were due to go to Brisbane this year to host an event there and watch the team play there, and then shortly after that, I don't know, we sound very spoiled when we say this, but then to go to LA and the fact that neither of them happened is like actually quite gutting. So if the world goes back to normal, which seems to me from the outside, it seems to be America that's coping the least well with this at the moment. If it goes back to normal in any form, then we would love to. 1,000,000%, I would love to be back then in the summer. But I guess everything in life at the moment is kind of on hold, unfortunately.
Yeah, we had the best time out there. We did, and you know, apart from all the kind of frolics and the stuff that we did outside the event. The event was the pinnacle for us, and we, me and X have said ourselves that it's one of our greatest achievements to go to a different country and sell out an event with fans from overseas and meet the guys that are just so positive, so passionate, so full of love for West Ham. And it was a really, really special day. And after speaking to John Black, there's still a big demand for it, you know, not just in Vegas, but we're looking to move it to LA, and then we might look to move it to a different state after that, because obviously there are American fans all over America. So it's got legs, it's got potential. And obviously we've been there and done it last year and had a fantastic time. So there's absolutely no reason other than something like this pandemic that could stop us doing it again. So God willing, we'll definitely do it next year.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I it's probably one of my favorite things I've gotten to do in my life, really. I mean, I had so much fun. I was my first trip to Vegas. I'd never been to Vegas before. Meeting yourselves and all the other fans. And it was just an amazing day, wasn't it? And then the next day, getting to record the podcast with you guys and John Spector. I mean, I think that's one of the highlights of my my West Ham fandom. And it wasn't even going to a game. It was going to a bar to watch with other people. So I really hope we get to do it again.
Yeah, where was you, Tony? That's the question.
He was in Brighton.
I was at the Brighton game. I was actually there.
So you're a loyal fan. You're a proper fan.
Listen, I had already planned to go to the Brighton game because I was over there for the Ashes at the time. And since they weren't moving the cricket for me, I had to stick with my trip.
Yeah, as an American cricket fan, you must be even more unique than an American West Ham football fan. I mean, there can't be many Americans that like cricket.
No,
like
there's
English
not.
Well,
just before the podcast, I was watching the T20 before I hopped on here with you guys. They obviously, England took a loss, which is disappointing. It's really weird being an American supporting the English cricket team because the American cricket team rarely ever plays. We do have one, though, so that's kind of cool, but they rarely ever play. So I'm an adopted English cricket fan.
Nice one.
Amazing.
This next one here is from Noble Art and Oliver at Noble Art 16 on Twitter. And his question is, can you make Dave and X do their best American accent? So I want to hear your two best USA accent. You have to do it. There's no backing down here. You're on the spot. Got
to
do it.
I can't wait for X to do this.
I was going to say, the thing about this is that Dave is actually quite good at impressions. he could do really like famous boxers, famous celebrities, and he's actually really good. Me, on the other hand, I can't pronounce anything that's not a standard British name. So to try and put on an American accent with this strange voice of mine, I think I'm going to offend most of your listeners.
Make sure you throw one yaw in there.
Yeah. One yaw. I need one of them.
What's funny is...
I'll let Dave go first. Start, and then it can only get better.
Oh, God. Okay. Hey, I'm Brawley motherfucking Diamond. This is my buddy Tony, and we run the West Ham Way motherfucking USA podcast, and I'm here to say one thing. Let's go, West Ham. Let's go.
It's funny because most of the time when people do an American accent, they go with like the Southern, like the Texas and idiotic redneck accent. But you've gone with like this New York, New Jersey thing.
Boston.
Oh my goodness.
Chicago. The Northeast.
I literally don't know where to go from that. Seriously, I don't even know what to say.
I've got to hear something. I can't wait for you to say this.
Howdy, y'all. This is the West Ham way, USA.
Okay, yo, I'm a big New York Giants fan, and I like going to the MetLife Stadium to see the Giants beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm like a motherfucking massive fan. You know, and if you want to challenge me on my support, I would tell you I've got the biggest fandom. I'm on it, man. I'm on it.
You two broke out the motherfuckers. Like
That's how we roll. That's how we roll. That's how we do shit.
Oh my goodness! I gotta wipe the tears from my eyes. Holy!
I thought I was watching a Samuel L. Jackson film. Motherfuckers all over.
Dave say it, and Dave said motherfucker so well that I thought, right, I don't know what I'm talking about here, just throw it in and see if mine is.
Oh my goodness, guys, thank you so much for that. The next question.
You know what? We need to flip reverse this. Let's hear your twos with British accents.
Tony, that's a great shout.
Tony's got to kick us off. Tony's got to go first.
All right, so I'm going to try it. I don't know if he listens to the podcast. This is going to come off as somewhat offensive, but I'm going to try and do my buddy Ian. My name's Ian, and how are you? All right, yeah. Proper West Ham. Yeah, we go to up the park and, you know, watch us beat down Chelsea, the cunts, you know. Get some pie and mash and some trumpets. I need some tea, y'all. Oh, he didn't say y'all, but I thought that was
wrong. We've gone.
That's right.
No disrespect to Ian, but I think he needs some help.
it sounds like he might have some respiratory problems.
Yeah. Oh. Come on, Brawley. That sounded a little bit like Ian, a little bit. Brawley's going to say no. That's okay.
I'm going to
get Ian on the fucking podcast and then show you all this.
Well, Ian sounds like a geezer, to be honest.
He does. Good guy. I love Ian.
I think Brawley's got a bit of an unfair advantage here from memory, Brawley's dad is British, so he's brought up hearing a British accent on a regular basis. So actually, out of three accents, Brawley, the pressure is on you to get this right.
Yep.
Fucking it. I think I started to go somewhere Australian. Fucking hell. That Gold Sullivan and Brady, they're a bunch of fucking cunts. I think I'm Australian. I don't know where this has come from. Fucking GSB out. Fucking cunts.
I love the fact that we can't actually communicate.
I love the American perception that every Englishman like cunt is at the forefront of our of our language.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I almost caught myself saying it at school one time because I went to Oxford Brookes when I lived there, and from being at football and all my buddies saying it, it almost came into my vernacular on a regular basis. And I accidentally said it at a university one time. I was like, oh shit, this is going to be bad for me.
It's because that word's not used that often in America.
It's bad over here. Women will be very, very offended when they hear us use that word over here.
Okay. So I wanted to ask this one, if that's all right. This one's from Will Bellow. I wanted to know, so this person asked Brawley and I a question and wanted to know our favorite British dishes, and we'll get to that in a second. But I wanted to know, like, what do you guys think is the quintessential American food that you would like?
I'll be honest with you. I find it hard to define. When I think of it, I just think of large portions. and I just think, like, burgers, really. That's the only, and steak. That's the sort of thing that really comes into my head, which I think is a massive stereotype. But that's all I can think of. Not gonna lie.
To be honest, I would go along with that. I mean, you have American diners in this country that are obviously themed on American diners over there. Like, you know, one of the favourite places to take the kids is TGI Fridays. Don't know if you have that over there.
There's a big chain over here, TGI Fridays.
And I'm assuming that's obviously quite stereotypical, but that is burgers and ribs and steaks and chips. I think the portion sizes are a little bit different, but I think so. I would go along with that, X, actually. Is that fair, lads, would you say?
Yeah, I would say so. That was close as you're going to get over there because they try to make American pancakes and it just doesn't work out well. Brawley, what would be your favorite British food?
My favorite British meal when I go over there, this is going to sound bizarre, but Chinese food in England is incredible. Like, you go to the local Chinese place and it's not like our Chinese food's all fried and like sweet. And like you go over there and it actually tastes like proper Chinese food. So I love going for a Chinese over there. I also love going for a curry, although I can find a good curry house here in the United States. It's quite similar. But if I had to go with like actual traditionally British meal, nothing beats going down to the chippy and getting a fish and chips and a chip buddy. You just can't beat it. I love a Cornish pasty as well. I love a pasty and pie. But if I mean, stereotypically British, a good fish and chips and a chip buddy from the local chippy is you just can't beat it.
What about pie and mash?
I love a pie and mash.
I love pie and mash. Yeah. I have to skip the jelly deals though. Can't do it.
Oh yeah, that's disgusting.
Rank, isn't it?
If I had to pick a British food, I would definitely say sticky toffee pudding. It has got to be one of my favorites there. and I'm going to sound like a teenager here, but one thing I always look forward to, just because it's not that great, but just because we don't really have it here, is getting some Nando's.
Do have it here in Chicago. I go to Nando's when I'm in Chicago, but yeah, where you're at in Philly, there's no Nando's. There's some in D.C. and there's some in Chicago.
There's some in Baltimore. I have to drive an hour and a half in America to get some Nando's, and it's still not the same.
That's 5 hours. It's like 4.5 hours, 5 hours from me to Chicago. We have a few others here. Ian Tricheri asked if he thought the board are stripping assets, and we've already talked about that. The next one that I had here on my phone is from Neil Fitzgerald, and I guess this one's kind of for you, X. He asked, was all the Red Bull model stuff like the old project, or was there a desire to actually get young players in, but the board simply didn't realize what he wanted? Do you have, like, are we still trying to do the Red Bull model, or what do you think?
I think ultimately that's the model that we'd like to sort of follow and adopt. But the problem is that it sounds easier to do than it actually is, because when you're looking for young players to come through, they cost more money than what we, I guess, would like them to. So we haven't really, when you've got no money to do anything, you can't really do any model. So
scouts.
And I mean, the thing is, ideally, by definition, the model of a Red Bull is to have young players coming through and to buy young talent. Well, we sold Grady, so I guess they're probably kind of for the time being realize that model isn't gonna be sufficient. And at the moment, I'm very unclear what the strategy is at the moment. We can say it's the Red Bull model, or it's this model, or it's that model. I still think the model is whatever player we can get from certain agents that is cost effective is the model.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know what that's defined as, but
it's true. I mean, there is no clear. You can't look at what the owners are doing and think, wow, this is what they're going for. No, it's who's Will Salthouse got coming through that's available, and that's about it. And that's kind of scary. Tony, do you have any more questions for these guys, or should we let them go?
I got one more. Okay. And my phone just died, so I can't really. His name was Matthew something. Again, my phone died. But I'm going to paraphrase what he said since I don't have the exact tweet. However, it was along the lines of, what are GSB doing? Do they think that we're going for relegation with lack of investment, which we kind of talked about earlier? But I'd like to clear something up. I'm going to paraphrase his question and pretty much confirm with you guys. If we get relegated, that would be absolutely terrible for the evaluation
of the club, correct? So there's no reason that they would want us to be relegated. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, 100%. I made a bit of a comment that got blown out of proportion. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Where I said that the board, someone asked me a very similar question. Do the board want West Ham to get relegated? And my response, without even thinking about it, I didn't even quote tweet it. It was just a reply on Twitter, was, of course, they don't want us to go down, but they want us to stay up with a minimal outlay. Yeah, so basically, Sorry, go on, mate.
No, I was just going to say minimal outlay is what everyone got caught up on and was blown way, way, way out of proportion, I thought.
Oh, massively, mate, massively. I mean, there was shows doing, sites doing shows based on that quote. I saw people doing posters of it, and it was literally my way of saying, of course, they don't want us to go down, but we haven't got much money to spend, so they don't want to spend much, basically. But it just got picked up and went everywhere. But what I was trying to say is true. There's no reason for the board to want us to get relegated. That doesn't help them in any form, because the value of the club goes down, the value of the players that we have goes down. Yeah. The potential buyers, that, you know, there'll be less of them, so there's no benefit to us to go down. But the bottom line is we don't have much money to spend on new players, so that's the situation.
Yeah, I think that's a fair answer. And that was, by the way, Matthew Edge Wilkins at Matt Edge Wilkins on Twitter. And we'll have to wrap it up there, guys. We got a lot of questions, and we're sorry if we didn't get to yours. We've run a little long here, so we do apologize. But we do want to thank Dave and X for giving us a lot of time out of their evening, over an hour and a half now. And we really, really, really appreciate it, guys. So hopefully we'll see you next season. I'm going to be trying to come over there before my baby's born in February. So hopefully I'll get to see you guys if we're doing West Ham Way events over there. Who knows what the world's going to look like in a couple of months. But if not, then hopefully we'll get to see each other back in L.A. or Vegas at an event over here. And like I said, we really appreciate you two coming on and giving us the time.
Or on the pod even sooner.
Yeah. No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Like I said, both Dave and I really have a great, you two are top blokes. What you do with your podcast is brilliant. As I said, we had a great experience when we were out there. So I think for us, we're more than willing to sort of come on when you need us to. And also, it'd be great to see you guys when we can.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And keep up the good work, lads. You're doing a great job.
Cheers, guys. Well, we'll take a note out of your playbook here, and we'll sign off with saying be lucky, and until next week,
come on you Irons.